Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Inbound Unbound. Joining me today is my colleague Michaela Ryan. Michaela is an expert in all things inbound marketing, specializing in, what do you think, like inbound strategy, right?
That's my favorite.
That's
thing to
that's
talk
your
about,
favorite so. Thing to talk about. That is a bold claim.
It is a bold claim, but I stand by it.
I stand by it. Okay. Perfect. Well, we've got quite a bit to go through today. So we are, I know it's only August for us, but we are nearing strategy season for 2025 already.
Yeah.
So let me ask you first and foremost, have you started your strategy planning and everything?
I feel like strategy is one of those things that it's not starting it or ending it. It's a constant. I have my documents up where as ideas come up, as I'm talking to clients, as I'm seeing cool things happening in the wild, I'm keeping those all in mind and I'm working towards building those out. I haven't put pen to paper on the strategies yet. That will probably happen closer to...
It's coming
sooner than I think anyone who plays a big hand in doing the strategies would like to admit, just because it can be such a huge undertaking, especially on the agency side when you have so many different clients. And that's the fun of it. You get to think through everything, but also the timing of everything and how do you make sure that you're dedicating the right amount of time to everyone.
Here's 10 to 12 large accounts. Go through, create annual strategies for each. Pay attention to your quarterly strategies. Also, you have to do the rest of your normal job as well. And go through all the constant revisions and workshops and trainings and all that fun jazz.
Yeah, no pressure.
So. Yeah, none at all. None. Super easy stuff. So I guess before we get into the real meat and potatoes today, Michaela, give us a quick introduction on yourself. Who are you? What brought you to PAD? What do you do in your day-to-day outside of just, let's jot down notes for strategies? What makes you tick?
Yeah, absolutely. So as Zach said, I am Michaela Ryan. I am an inbound marketing strategist here at Protocol 80. I've been here for about 2 years. Prior to that, I was still on the agency side, still doing strategist things, still doing what I love, but found P80 and it's such a great, I'm sure everyone from P80 who's been on this podcast has said the same thing, but working together as a team is my favorite part about being here. There's so many experts in so many different things. I love never being fully the smartest person in any room while we're in the office. And yeah, it's just a ton of fun. I'd say outside of P80, I love to hang out with my dog. I'm a dog person over a cat person. I know that's controversial.
That is very controversial.
I'm also a tea person over a coffee person. So just really an oddball here, I guess.
to paint a picture, she's got a nice tea with her green tea, looks like.
It's black tea, but tea, you know, okay. It's,
and I've got my
it's
coffee,
a bit watered
so,
down. Yeah. So I came to represent today with that. I absolutely love it here. Strategy is my passion, but I love working with clients on, you know, those hardball questions where, how are we going to generate more leads? How are we going to do the things, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I was a strategist for many years here, and it was always like a big puzzle. And I can remember spending so many Octobers, Novembers, and Decembers frustrated putting together those annual strategies, trying to figure out, well, what the hell do we do? How do we increase MQLs, SQLs, whatever, by 20% next year? How do we break into this new channel for you guys? And the level of, oh my gosh, I don't know how to conjugate the word correctly, catharsism?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know what you're trying to say.
It was such a cathartic, amazing feeling. Whenever everything would just click into place and it would finally just make sense and you'd have that aha moment. And then you'd have to move on to the next one and start the whole process all over.
Oh, right. Yeah. And my process starts with what I like to call my crazy brainstorming session, where I take all of... Well, so I start... I write down notes as the year goes on. So I have that idea document. And then I take that and I get a bunch of just plain printer paper from the printer. And I just start writing out different ideas, different things I have, kind of trying to connect things together. It looks like it's almost like when someone's making a crime map. Well, it's very like beautiful mind style, like just chaos to anyone other than, like, it's very organized in my head. And then once I get through that, I have my pieces of papers lined out the way that I like them to be. I'm starting to see how the puzzle, as you said, is starting to fit together. And then from there, I start to organize into just one piece of printer paper. And then I go. Just
one piece of printer paper.
Just bullets on one piece of printer paper. So I can reference the other ones that are all scribbled on and have all of the reasons why I'm recommending that. And then I start to type everything up into the actual strategy doc that the client sees so that it's not messy. But I definitely start messy. That's my biggest recommendation.
As long as you're presenting something that's nice and clean and coherent, I guess that's all that matters.
Yeah.
See, I don't think I could be any more opposite in my planning. It sounds like you're one of those people that write everything down. You're very diligent in note-taking. Throughout the entire year, that is super impressive. Whereas I have a handful of sticky notes, and then I do that thing where I always tell myself, no, I don't need to write that down. I'll remember it. And of course, past Zach, well, he's a jerk. He doesn't remember anything. And then present Zach is always frantically trying to figure out, well, what were we talking about? So thankfully, that comes up less and less as I do more and more things on HubSpot onboardings and large projects like that and data migration stuff. You don't have to worry about what happened back in March when you're working with somebody only for 2 months. So,
right. And that's the type of stuff that you're brilliant. Mine, I'm like, aha.
That's the stuff that I feel like I step into it after doing strategy for so many years. It's still a mystery to me. Yeah. We work through every project, but I'm like, what the hell just happened at the end of it? So cool. Well, let's get into it today. So if you couldn't tell by the title of the podcast, our dear listeners, today we're going to be talking about inbound marketing and how it meets AI when it comes to strategy development. So maximizing the benefits, minimizing the risks, what works, what doesn't work, and all that fun stuff. So, Michaela, I want to start by asking you a very, very important question. What is AI in inbound marketing?
It is a lot. And for lack of a better word, it is what you make it to be. I guess, it's
so poignant.
Constantly changing. So that's the hardest part when we're sitting here and we're thinking, all right, 2025 is coming up right around the corner. We're planning our strategies. How is AI going to play a role in that? And if you're wondering if the answer is should it or shouldn't it, it is regardless. And I think finding the best ways to utilize it is going to be what makes the difference between a successful strategy in 2025 and an unsuccessful strategy in 2025.
Can I ask, this is going to deviate from our general podcast notes a little bit, but when we think about using AI in strategy development, are you using it at all for actually developing the strategy, or is it specifically just a point in the strategy to use AI for XYZ?
For me, it again, and I hate to say it, it's a little bit of both. I think in terms of forming the strategy, it can be super helpful for some of the very basic brainstorming ideas. I think that it can be utilized to, especially for some topic identification. I think using it on the analytics side, certain platforms are starting to integrate it right in, especially on the Google Ads side of things, and just using predictive.
I'm a huge ads guy. I love all the AI stuff inside ads.
Exactly. And even in HubSpot and deal generation, there's some predictive analytics there. And I think using AI as a starting point for analyzing what topics are related to a really well-performing topic. So say you have your top blog is performing really, really well. You're not sure how you can get any more juice out of it, but you know that that will be huge for moving forward. You can putting that blog in and even asking, what are some questions that someone might have after reading this? What are the next steps? What are the follow-up questions? And I think using that as a component in your strategy to help with ideation and things like that is super important and super beneficial. I also think it needs to be a component within the strategy. How are you using some of the new tools? I know the Performance Max Google Ads has been something that we've started to really focus in on for a lot of clients because we're seeing good ROI on those.
I was doing a little bit of ad creation earlier with Chrissy and Rory to support with some stuff that they're doing for a client. And it's been quite a while, honestly, since I've gotten and created a brand new account from scratch, let alone campaigns from scratch and all that fun stuff. And the level of AI-ness baked into nearly every step now for just a simple search ad creation is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
And I know that Google announced recently in their annual event that there is just going to be full AI permeation across every step. And I think that we're going to start seeing that more and more. I mean, of course, we're going to start seeing it more and more. AI is the big thing right now, but we're going to start seeing that more and more across all the different tools that we're using.
Oh, absolutely.
HubSpot too.
Yeah. And the HubSpot content hub or yes. content editions.
Oh my goodness.
I know that cool gets thing. You all jazzed, but.
Gets me all jazzed up. Yeah.
But it's insane. And it's starting to be a part of everything. And I'm excited for that. I think with that also comes with great power comes great responsibility. And there's things that definitely need to be considered and steered away from. And I know everyone's eager to use it, but making sure that you're using it in the most strategic way is not deviating from standard best practices too far, but using it to help you achieve more is exactly. like the big thing there.
Yeah, I got the on that actually. I got the pleasure of working with Zach Hutchins. I think you know Zach, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A couple of weeks back for a HubSpot user group session in Rochester, New York. Check him out on LinkedIn. Hutchinbound, great dude.
Great company.
He's great.
He's great. All around great. but the topic that I got to speak about was AI in HubSpot marketing in general, and it was really cool. We got to go through and I presented how. Using just AI tools in HubSpot, nothing else, no ChatGPT, no Jasper, no Gemini, no Bard, nothing else. How you can go through, you can start creating blog contents, blog content. The derivative content works from that with the content remix tool, using the blog topic generator to just determine the overall topic of a blog that you want to create stuff on, and then how that flows through into potential like. Service hub support and sales hub support and reporting and all this cool stuff. And it was just this big narrative that we got to weave using all the AI HubSpot tools. And I left everybody with just one note for that is, you know, these things may not be perfect right now. You might get into the blog post generator and think, oh, this is kind of hit or miss. The image is pretty cruddy, whatever. The AI reporting, not quite there yet. But I made the point that this is the worst it's ever going to be. And invariably, your competitors are using these. Mm. If you're not spending the time learning how to use these tools successfully now, then you're going to be well behind the curve when they're a bit more polished here and in 6 months, in a year, or whatever else in time frame is.
Right. They're evolving so rapidly. And if you don't start now, you're going to have a much higher hill to climb, so to speak.
Start phrasing it like that.
Yeah.
Much steeper hill to climb if you just don't learn how to use them now. We've talked about using AI and a bunch of different things so far, and we've kind of jumped all over the place, but I want to pivot now. We've obviously, as an agency, been using AI for quite a while. As individuals, as just people, I think we use AI in our daily lives too. What are potentially some common mistakes you've seen to using AI, to adopting AI, either here at P80, we can call ourselves out, for clients that have just been trying to use AI to kind of circumvent best practices or anything else?
I think the biggest thing that I've seen on the client side are people who they see AI, they are excited about it as they should be. We're excited about it, I know, but just over-relying on it, doing too much too soon. Here at P80, I know that one of our biggest things was the human involvement. Like, yes, AI can do amazing things, but it needs our help. It needs our guidance. And so in our learning and our trials and errors, we created specific prompts that will help us get the desired outcome for every piece of like larger content that we're utilizing AI with. We're making sure that it's mostly a human created piece rather than just an AI created piece. And I think one thing that I've seen on the client side is just, well, I can just create this blog and I have content and that's great. And it can absolutely help speed up the creation of content. But when you're relying on it too heavily, it's just not going to perform the way that we know good content can perform. It's not to say that it's not a good starting spot. It's not to say that you can't use it for brainstorming, ideation, helping fill out some of your outlines, helping you when you're stuck and you have writer's block and you're like, I need words.
Everyone.
But yeah, I think that's the number one cautionary tale I would tell is just don't rely too heavily on it. There's still such a need for human involvement, and yeah, give humans the credit where credit is due.
I actually have a story exactly about that. So I was working with a guy I was consulting with a few weeks back, and he wanted a ton of content made, and yeah, of course we're a content production agency and we can support that, but he wasn't able to go that route with us. So he was asking about AI content generation. I said, well, it's something that PD uses sparingly to help, you know, get through some writer's block, to revise some content, things like that. We never ever go through or recommend going through and just telling ChatGPT, hey, write me a blog on this topic, especially if it's like a current event type thing that it just doesn't have information on. So he showed me a blog that he had ChatGPT write using the free model of ChatGPT. Then he took it through and ran it through another AI tool to make it sound a little bit more human. Then he ran it through again, thinking it was going to make it sound even more human. And that's what was published. And that's the cadence that's going to be proceeded for him. He's not a client. He can do whatever he wants. Advocated against it. But, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You've got to have the human element in there. It's just, otherwise, computer-generated trash. It's not going to provide value to anybody.
It's hard when you recommend something and you know you're right, but you can't make people do what you them to. That's always, I feel like, the hardest thing when you're like, that's definitely not what you should be doing. And then they go ahead and do it. And it's just like, it's not going to help you. It's not going to help you achieve the goal that you want to achieve. And there's other ways where we could help you achieve that goal. It hurts my heart to see
even,
it.
Even if it's not with us, just... Here's right. the TLDR and what you should do and what you shouldn't do. Don't do that.
Right. I feel that way. Buying email lists is one of those hills that I will continue to die on.
Yep. Yep. But there's 50,000 contacts in here, but you shouldn't use them.
But don't.
But don't. So what about some successful stories about AI implementation or some good things about adopting AI?
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, for the brainstorming side of things, it can be super helpful. And I know our very own Chris Michelle here has played around with it in the terms of content nurturing. And
oh, what's that?
So content nurturing is a process that he's developed. And there's a few steps to it. The first is rewriting the intro paragraph, going through doing some of the normal activities that we would for reoptimization. But one of the biggest components and where AI comes to play is using it for additional questions added to the end. So at the very end of the blog, addressing some of those questions that someone might have after they've read the post and not deep diving, not doing a whole separate blog on it, but having short answers that immediately address those next questions, those next follow-up things that someone might be thinking about. And he does this using AI to scan the article and be like, what are the top 3 to 5 questions that someone might have after this?
I feel like you're giving away our trade secrets here.
I know, but I feel like I should. It's like an
I feel like you should, service. Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, and he doesn't use AI to answer those questions. So that's still where his expertise or the client's thought leadership come into play. But at least using those to generate those ideas. And we've seen that this practice has been incredibly successful. I think in a matter of 3 months, we saw one of the blogs increase about traffic about 135%.
Holy crap.
So it does work.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Wow, kudos to Chris.
I know. And it's not just
he should
that.
Be like a senior content editor or something.
Yeah, he should be. I mean.
He is.
What do we have to do to get that app? No, but it was really cool to watch that develop. And we've been using it on a bunch of different pieces for a bunch of different clients. So it's not just a one-off like, oh, that blog just had other issues that were fixed during it. Because again, it's a component of what we're doing with the content nurturing, not the whole part. But being able to mix that in, we've started to see it take off. So
awesome. Seems like a natural next step to the Google's people also ask section.
Right. It's like we're becoming the people.
So how is that represented on the page? Is it like an FAQ section at the bottom? Is it just like an accordion menu? I haven't seen any of your work.
So I like the accordion menu idea. That's something that I've been thinking about. But most often right now, we're just doing it as additional H2s, H3s, having like a follow-up question section and then having those be their own mini bullets. I've seen it done. I think Chris has done it in a table before to try to like visualize it differently.
Sure.
But for the most part, again, just adding them into the text as H2s and paragraphs, and it's been working pretty well.
thinking about like the next version of generative search experience, or I guess Google calls it search generative experience, which just sounds terrible. In Google Search and Bing and whatever other search engines will adopt some variation thereof, it sounds like something like that can be critical in getting featured in those new, we'll call them like the featured snippet primes, those AI snippets. Yeah, that's interesting. I'll chat with Chris. That's
yeah,
pretty cool.
And it has truly massive, like, I don't want to claim that as mine, because that was fully a Chris idea, and he's the one that's brought it to us, but super cool and super exciting, and something that I think we'll see a lot more of, because again, I think we'll be fighting as harder than ever for that prime featured snippet spot with the AI, and that's going to be king. I mean, we're always aiming for this feature snippet. That's where it's like, it's a great example of where your strategy needs to be aware of it, but it's not necessarily going to change. Like, you don't need to change your SEO strategy drastically, but how can you adapt it to make sure that you are being competitive and hitting those featured snippet spots?
Mikhail, don't get me started on the SEO. I could sit here to talk about it for the next 8 hours. I have some very strong feelings.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we'll pivot just very quickly.
Yeah, so, I want to hear some of the strong feelings.
Google was recently hit with an antitrust suit.
I did.
For organic search monopolization. Hmm. So I wonder if they're going to...
What do you think that will change?
God only knows. I don't think that they're going to get broken up at all. I think that they'll get like a small slap on the wrist fine. I think that they might have to be a bit more transparent about paying folk like Apple to be the predefined or predetermined search engine on iOS or whatever. We're going to see something very minimal come from it, I'm sure. But how wild would it be to see like a massive antitrust suit levied against Google and see them having to like break up?
That would be wild, insane. Right? And my brain is just kind of like,
migrates to Yahoo or Bing.
I can't even imagine that and what that would be like. <It'd> be from terrible. Either from just a user experience.
It'd be terrible.
Because
I just give up the internet at that point.
Like, I think I'd have to. I'd be like, all right, I'm now crawling into a bunker.
Sorry, DuckDuckGo. We love you, but you're just not quite ready to replace Google.
Not ready. Not ready is the perfect way to explain that.
We're talking about AI. We're talking about Google. There's no way that we can't talk about AI and content creation. We've touched on this a little bit. You talked a little bit about how Chris is using it for content analysis and potentially next steps. But when we just think broad content creation with AI, what comes to mind for you? What are you doing with it right now?
Yeah, there's so many nice little ways to use it that just help speed up the process. I think it's especially important to consider it for A/B testing. Mm-hmm. I love using it for
anybody who might be listening who isn't familiar with what A/B testing or multivariate testing is.
It's a good
Can you
point.
Give a quick explanation?
Yes. So A/B testing is having slight tweaks to multiple different or to a different item on each of the desired pieces. So for an email example, changing out those subject lines to see which gets more opens, or it internally in the email, changing out the call to action button or the call to action itself to see if that's going to increase click rates. So usually testing one singular item so that you're not testing a million things all at once and then you don't know what is actually performing better.
Right.
That's like the common... issue that I see. It's like, oh, great, we're doing an A/B test. And they're like, well, we want to test this and this and this. And I'm like, one at a time.
Well, first and foremost, don't call an A/B test then. Okay.
Right.
Janet. We don't have a Janet, but Janet will be nice.
I feel like Janet.
Janet. Yes. Janet would want that.
Janet would 100% want that. I just know it.
the flip side of that, where you are changing a handful of variables at one time, is called a multivariate test. Mm-hmm. It's a bit harder to determine what changed variable is responsible for an increase or a decrease in performance. But it is doable and maybe something that AI can help out with too. We were betting actually this really cool, oh my gosh, what were they? Like a reporting agency?
Oh, cool.
That was their whole shtick, was they can do analysis on multivariates, multivariate tests. Hmm. So they would integrate with like LinkedIn. They couldn't do Google Ads yet except through CSV, a few other ads platforms, Facebook, I think. And they would look at not just ad copy, but then the images in the ads. So if you had two identical ads, maybe a person standing in front of a couch in one, and then the exact same image except instead of a couch, it was like a recliner or something. One of them performed better than the other, that AI could go through and determine exactly what the difference was between the ads, why it performed better, what demographics it performed better in. And the platform was really cool. It was just a bit too in its infancy for PAD to adopt.
Yeah.
For the scale that we would need. We also need stuff like HubSpot integration so we can analyze different blog pages, different CTAs on those pages, Google Ads integrations, Bing Ads integrations. So the tools are coming. This one was wildly cool.
And for the life of me,
I'm so sorry, company, if you're listening. I can't remember what you're called right now, but I'll shout you out in a future episode. I promise I'll remember then.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool and something that I so look forward to. I know, again, we say a lot of these tools are so in its infancy, but about this time last year, so was AI in general. And look at where we're at now. So it's really exciting, the changes that are coming down the line in AI. Some of those things just blow my mind. I'm like, how does it work?
I like to use the example of the Will Smith eating spaghetti video from 2 years ago, where it just looks like a fever dream.
Yeah.
And then now it's lifelike.
Yeah.
It's just wild. I can't wait to see what happens in the next few years. I made a few predictions on a few other podcasts, but we won't say anything more about that right now.
You won't give me your top one, your top prediction.
Oh my gosh, top prediction. We're going to see fully. Okay, we're going to get into this. We're going to get into it. So my top prediction is within 3 to 5 years, probably closer to five, for this to see come to fruition. We're going to see Google results pages as they are now disappear. What we're going to see is ChatGPT, Gemini, whatever else version of Google search. We prompt a query, then we have an immediately instantaneously customized AI generated video created for you to explain whatever that is, for you to interact with, for you to get additional details on. So for example, if you have a question. This is the first time that I saw a search generative experience back in February of 2024 this year. I was doing some research on what the heck was happening with a router that I was working with on my home network, trying to figure out if it was borked or if I was doing something wrong. It was user error. Of course it was. but that's when the idea first came to me. I was like, you know what? We're going to see follow-up questions be able to be asked of these AI generated results. And sure enough, we can now ask follow-ups of the search generative experience directly in search. And I think just the next step of that is video ads. Yeah. Sorry, not video ads, but video results. And we're going to start seeing an increasing number of video results generated on a per-user basis with full customizability. So you can set an avatar that speaks to you, maybe 10 years out for that. So you can set voices like we can in ChatGPT, on Siri, whatever else right now. So it's something familiar to you because at the end of the day, Google's going to want people in the ecosystem. They're going to want to create the most highly customized search experience possible. And we're starting to see that already where you can customize your own search results. But, you know, I'm rambling at this point. We're going to see customized videos in search for you that you can interact with. We're all going to be Iron Man interacting with Jarvis at some point.
And I'm here for it. I'm looking forward to it. That sounds very cool. Do you think that having explainer videos, almost blog content videos is something that clients should start to look into now?
Without a doubt, 100%. If you don't have videos on your site, start now. Yesterday.
Okay, cool.
I just saw a cool stat. It was ChatGPT in a single day consumes a lifetime of videos. Sorry, a human's lifetime's worth of videos for its training and analysis. So, I mean, if you want to be featured in the video 5 years from now, you better start
producing. Better start it now. Yeah. And I didn't have that prediction on my radar, but I did know just from the direction that we're going, the way that search has been going, that having that video content can be so productive. So I'm glad you agree. And I like your, I'm with you on your prediction. I think that sounds is very feasible.
And cool as hell.
Very cool. It's like when you first said that, almost like your own little avatar reminded me of Clippy. Back in the day. Like, this would be
Clippy.
Clippy, 10.0. Clippy, much, much, much improved. And if you get to pick your avatar, I'm picking Clippy. And I hope that's an option for me.
It's going to be a DLC on Bing. You know what? I'll pay it. I'll pay the $15.99 a month for Clippy. Let's take a a different route now. So we've talked about AI in marketing and strategy development. I don't know how in-depth your strategies go with things like customer engagement on site for improving pages consumed, improving bounce rates, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. If not, that's okay. But where do you see AI coming to play with that sort of stuff?
I think it could help with these hyper-customized experiences and the use of smart content on those pages. I think...
What's smart content? Again, for any user who might not be familiar.
So smart content is an option through HubSpot where you can tailor it to people who are a specific lifecycle stage in HubSpot. So MQL, SQL, customer, things like that, you can customize it to lists. So if you have a specific list of people that you want to see something different, maybe you know exactly they fit one of your specific personas, you can add them to that list. And you can, as long as they're contacts within the HubSpot system, show different versions of a page to them that speaks more directly to where they're at in the user journey. And I think using AI to help with creating variations of that for helping to even define those personas. I know, again, can never be fully replaced the human interaction, but to build out exactly who your persona is, you can enter these data points that you know about your customers and your ideal customers at the moment and use AI to help generate those personas and then use that to help create the content for those people. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think that that's one way that we're going to see it on a web page standpoint is just a lot. Smart content has been around for a while. I think it's been underutilized, and I think that AI is going to help it become.
I hope so.
Bigger.
There's also the some new stuff coming down the HubSpot pipeline. I'm probably not the best person to talk about this, but from like a sales enablement perspective too, for new like AI-driven calculated properties that can help out with sales teams to determine likelihood to close based on a whole slew of factors, analyzing emails that have been sent, analyzing tone in those emails, days to respond, pegging that against account averages or industry averages or anything else. So the sales folks are going to see the people who are most likely to close based on like full AI analysis versus somebody who's less likely to close and see a numeric score out of 100 and then propose next steps for you too based on what's worked best for folks in similar industries.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to talk about Josh about that because I think I'm sure he'll have ideas.
He's definitely going to be the expert. That's Josh Curcio here at PAD. I remember just seeing a little bit about that recently. I may have potentially hyperbolized some things in there, but as far as I remember, that's...
Well, that is a rabbit hole I will be falling right down later.
What would that be? Yeah, just take all the guesswork and all the heavy lifting from your sales teams and just let them focus on the folks who have a higher likelihood to actually close.
I think, too, the next step of that and always thinking of it from the marketing side is I'm sure there's going to be ways to kind of take a look at, okay, what are the trends that we're seeing within these people who are ready to close? How are they coming to the site? What content is driving that?
Exactly.
How do we do more of that? And I'm just so exciting.
Oh my gosh, I know. So we never like having like marketing teams operate in a vacuum, sales teams operate in a vacuum for full inbound success. You've got to have that the harmony between the two. So having a tool like that in place to fully show these are the pieces of content that the folks who are transitioning into SQLs who have a greater than 50% likelihood to close over the next 2 quarters. This is what they're consuming. This is what they care most about. Mm-hmm. That would be massively empowering to a sales team.
So
and that's
huge.
Data that marketing can hand over then. And
right.
Stuff that marketing can then leverage to further scale their efforts.
Right. And it will help too if there's ever questions from the sales team on, well, what are you guys actually, how are you guys helping move the needle? How are you helping?
Yeah. What's marketing even doing?
Yeah. What are they doing?
Yeah.
I could see that as a great way to kind of be that backup to be like, I'm doing all this.
Look at it. Prove it.
So very cool.
Something that I think we often overlook in discussing AI internally with clients and even just in other shows that I've listened to, things that I've read is the ethical considerations around using AI. That can be things like the biases that we see in different algorithms. As much as any LLM wants to say that there is a 0% bias, of course, there's always going to be bias. It's human nature. If it's consuming human content, it's consuming bias. internal ethical standards that teams might set, like that P80 has. We will never, ever produce a piece of 100% AI-generated content. We use it very strictly to help with like idea generation, to analyze content that we've written, to potentially create things like ad headlines based on works that we've already done before or other derivative work, something that might be used in a social post, for example. Never, ever will we create fully AI-generated pieces. So when we think about the ethical considerations of AI-generated works and AI in general, Miguel, where do you stand? Is it A-OK to use all of this stuff, to use all these tools, to take some heavy lifting off our team? Is it something that we should kind of back off from? What do you think? No right or wrong answers.
I know. It's hard. I think the steps that we have taken are good first steps to make sure that we're not being unethical in our use of AI. Having that human interaction and intervention is obviously going to be key. The one thing I'll preface this with is it's changing. It's always been changing. I keep saying it, but I think we're going to have to change to what is ethical now might not be down the road, and keeping an eye on that and keeping that in our headspace is just so important to make sure that these tools, again, great power, great responsibility. I'll say it again, but just making sure that you're adapting with the tools to make sure that you're staying ethical.
Well said. So, Michaela, you and I both went to St. Bonaventure University. You and I both have our MBAs from there. Shout out to any Bonas out there who are listening. I remember taking, I think my first semester, potentially second semester there, getting my MBA, since I matriculated from University of Pittsburgh at Bradford, a course on business ethics. Mm. And I remember thinking in that course, why on earth would anybody ever need to take a business ethics course? It seemed like so rote. It was right or wrong, black and white. There were very clear answers. And I don't know about you, but I feel like in the advent of AI as it is now, that's blurred completely. And gosh darn it, I would love to go take a new business ethics course that focuses on AI usage.
Yeah, I would too. A new updated one. I think it's so hard. I think you have to go back to it. It can be so simple with all these modern complexities. It's not. But how can you get, like, what are the principles that keep it simple? And how can you then apply it to AI? Like, it's not as cut and dry. It's not as black and white. But, like, trying to find the themes that you can kind of draw in and make sure that you're doing the right thing that way. Yeah. I think if it makes you itchy, you should probably...
If it makes you itchy, you should just avoid it?
No, you should ask something. Like, get a second opinion. Like, start to brainstorm it. I like that. That should be your red flag.
The degree to which it makes you itchy is the red flag. It's right. The color of the flag, yeah.
Right.
If you're 10 out of 10 itchy, it's a crimson flag.
Right.
I think we need to reach out to Bonaventure and see if they're looking for a couple of guest speakers on business AI.
Ooh, or business AI that ethics. That could be fun.
I think so, yeah. All right, so we talked about using AI a ton in marketing and sales enablement and analysis and strategy development. How do we actually measure success when we're talking about using AI?
I think it really depends on the use case, obviously. Like, mm-hmm. Each different use case is going to be measured differently. It's easy and it's hard in that I just feel like as you're measuring success, it's keeping an eye on things. And I feel like, I know we talked about the different testing, A-B testing and the multivariate testing. I think really keeping a close eye and keeping a close tab on things. And as you're doing things, making note of what you've changed, what you've done differently, and also what you've done through the use of AI, to take a look specifically at what is that impacting in the numbers? How are we seeing this improve our processes? And where is that all going?
Almost like the example you gave earlier where Chris was using it to come up with some additional end of blog topics. People also asked, we're going to refer to it as, we're going to steal that term from Google. Seeing that 134% increase in page views over a 3-month period.
Yeah.
So I guess we can say that is successful use of AI in marketing.
Right. Yeah. And and how often do you check? I know Chris at that point was checking
daily,
pretty obsessively, but like, I think
the line, it moves.
I know, and I was trying to be supportive, but also, like, you know, we have to look for trends, not just the day-to-day. If it spikes one day, it doesn't. So I think that's where I was going with what it's most important is to make sure that you have regular reports, monthly, quarterly, whatever cadence works for you. I highly recommend monthly, especially as you're testing different things so that you can keep an eye on what's moving where. But having those regular reports and making sure that you're checking in specifically on those pieces of content that you're altering or changing or creating with the help of AI.
Okay. And let's pull this back to our main topic too, with strategy development. Are you trying to bake anything into like your 2025 strategies, into your Q4 2024 strategies that says like specifically, this is how we plan on using AI for you. This is how we're going to measure success. This is what failure looks like. Anything like that?
I think it would be really productive to have that in there.
I think it'd be crazy hard to put in there too. Well, not that this is how we plan on using it, but this is how we plan on measuring it.
Right. I think that's the hardest part because everything, as I said, is you're going to be measuring different things differently, just given the nature of the content and how you're using AI to do it. I don't think we could ever completely outline this is how it's going to be used and report. Ooh, I think we can outline how it's going to be used, but I don't think we could ever fully describe step by step, this is how we're going to analyze it, because so much of that is you get into the data and you see something and then you dive in to see the why behind it. And you don't know what that area where you're diving in is necessarily going to be until you're in there and doing it. So that's where I think it's going to have to be different for every piece of content. I don't think we can fully outline what exactly we're going to be reporting on to a pin, but I think you can say we'll be analyzing this on a cadence of X, Y, or Z months, date, weeks, and letting them know, okay, we'll be looking at this monthly and we'll be reporting on that as part of our monthly reports.
Right.
And I think as far as we're going to be using it in this way, I think that could probably be more clearly defined over time, just as we, as an agency, start to define our processes and how we're using AI to help those out. I think there's areas where we could be like, this is approximately how we're going to be using AI to support these efforts.
Okay. Yeah, I want to check back in about this time next year too with you and just to see what that's looked like. And then maybe do a look into 2026 at that point. What we're going to be using AI for, how it was used in 2025. And
can't even imagine.
God only knows how many revisions it's going to go through, right?
Yeah, that's the one thing that we do know is that there's going to be changes, revisions, best practices are going to change, how we're using it's going to change. It's the only thing that I can confidently say at this point.
We also know for a fact that in 5 years, we're going to have interactable AI-generated videos directly in Google search, but you know.
Right. And
that's neither here nor there, I suppose. What other AI and strategy-related points would you like to discuss? I feel like we've talked about
covered so much. I think one area I'm super excited about, and we've touched on it a bit, is predictive analytics.
Talk to us about predictive analytics. First and foremost, again, for the users who don't know what it is, what on earth is predictive analytics?
So predictive analytics is the way AI is helping us forecast, really, and plan out, look at what is happening now and what might be happening in the future, which is
wild.
Awesome. It's like having a crystal ball. It's something that I'm super excited about. And again, it's one of those things that I don't think it's quite there yet, quite frankly. Like there's some places are using it in ways that are helpful, but I don't think we're even close to where it needs to be as productive as it can be for the user.
Where would you like to see predictive analytics be in your world for strategy for inbound marketing in the next 6 months?
I would love it to take a look at trends like lead generation or organic traffic metrics and predict that at the rate of cadence that something's being produced, what might that look like? What's a realistic range for that to look like in the future? I think that that would be super cool, super helpful. I know forecasting is always hard.
Yeah.
That would make it a lot easier to at least have some data to go back to on that, especially for like newer clients that we haven't been at a cadence for yet. It'd be really cool if they could analyze what's on their site, take a look at the content plan that we have and what's going to be produced and be able to spit out, I'm not expecting complete accuracy, but a general ballpark would be really awesome to have.
Or, yeah, so if we have, I'm thinking about some of our accounts right now, so if we have like a metal manufacturer that's been publishing content with us for just a year, maybe two blogs per month, maybe HubSpot can go through and project, you know, if you continue this cadence with this level of blog difficulty, these types of keywords, then we project this percent growth in traffic over the next 12 to 18 months. which translates into X MQLs, Y SQLs, and then maybe something that shows if we were to produce a blog a week or 4 blogs per month, mm-hmm. here's how that can increase exponentially. Here's how that translates into potential revenue because you're using Marketing and Sales Hub in tandem.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That would be
HubSpot. If you're amazing. Listening, man, we got to talk. We have ideas.
We have so many ideas.
And all it'll do is cost you a speaker spot at Inbound 2025.
Which is such a fair deal.
I know, right? We don't ask They're for getting much. A steal on this. Oh, well, airfare as well.
But yeah, no, that would be the most amazing thing and what I would love, because also that would help. A lot of times we get clients that come in and, for example, we've talked through best practice 4 blogs per month, but really exciting things come up internally.
Yep.
And we always try to stay agile while reminding them that the best practice would be this 4 blog per month.
There's always a shiny bobble.
Right. There's always a shiny bobble. And sometimes it makes sense to focus in on it. But if we're moving away from the efforts that we know are truly going to move the needle, then we kind of need to balance that. Having that predictive analytics, be able to say like, okay, well, this is what your traffic looks like at the end of the year. If we keep our cadence, this is what it looks like when we scale back.
Oh my gosh. We could do like a calculator on a landing page for them too. So we can just show, oh man.
Wow. So many good ideas.
HubSpot, reach out, please. I think we've covered quite a bit. The last thing that I really want to chat about today is, what role do you think AI is going to play in inbound in general in the future, in 6 months, in a year, in 5 years or beyond?
It's so hard because I think it'll change. It's making it easier for more people to create more content. Technically.
We'll harken back to that AI generated content run through 2 different AI editors.
Right. Like on paper, it should make it a lot quicker and a lot easier. I think we're never going to see inbound differ from that key point of providing value. So I think that's one of the things that you really have to think about and really ask yourself as you're using the AI tools that you have, is making sure that at the end of the day, you're still providing that value to the reader, the consumer of whatever you're creating. That's never going to not be important. It's never going to shift away from it. It might make it easier to define. Again, we talked about having it help define those personas and be really tailored to them. So I could see it changing in that aspect where we're able to get a little bit more granular, a little bit more specific. But at the same time, I don't think it's going to stray too far from the typical best practices that we've seen over time, at least at not this
point. I don't
think
so. Oh. Well said. All right. Well, thank you, Michaela, so much. That's all the time that we've got for today. Dear listeners, the single best way that you can help us grow this podcast is to leave a review, leave a rating if you would so choose. Tell a friend if you feel so inclined. And if you've got any ideas for future episodes that you'd like to see, please email us at info@protocol80.com. I've been Zach Ware today, as I am every day, here with Michaela. Michaela, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye.